Hey, Steph.
Hey, Michelle.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Right now, I'm great. What about you?
I'm doing okay. I have paint all over my body. We painted our hallway.
Way.
Yeah, it's fun. It's worth it. It's worth it. I put on a choker so it looks like I put myself together, but really I have paint all over my body.
Would you like just regular color in the walls? Nothing like
we painted our hallway. So it was just like a white hallway and we painted the bottom half and the doors and the frames black. So
it's
totally transformed. I'm really excited about it.
That's really cool. Make sure to let me know. Or is this the kind of things you post on Instagram anyway?
I did. Yeah. Okay. I've been posting like home improvement stuff on there just because it's so fun. And, you know,
okay.
It's just
I'll check
creative.
It out.
Creative. Yeah.
I love it. I'm the same with the condo. But we're kind of thinking of buying a house within a year. So I'm always like,
hesitant.
Oh, is it worth it?
Yeah. Totally. Because it's like, do I want to put my money into this place? I'm going to be leaving. Yeah.
So I'm like, I still want to put, for example, the wires of the TV in the wall, like these kind of things.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, so much trouble for potentially being moving eventually. Anyway.
I feel it. What have you been playing? What did you play this week?
Actually, I don't know if we talked about it last week, but I played Assassin's Creed
more. Oh, that's right, in the game.
Yeah, and I got both the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5 this week.
I'm so jealous. I mean, congratulations. I'm very happy for you. But they're sold out everywhere. I can't get them. I'm sure everybody listening has their own story of finding these things. Have you had them both since launch day?
So the Xbox arrived one day later and the PlayStation arrived on Friday. So it took 2 days later. I think it came out.
Which PlayStation
Wednesday?
Did you get? Which version of it?
The one with the disc.
Oh, good.
It was not available, the other one. It was sold out. So we got the one with the disc. But so I played with both. I'm a big Microsoft fan, and so I really like the Xbox, but I understand why everyone is like all over PS4, PS5. But I played a little bit of PS5 with the new controller. I don't know if you've tested and tried.
I haven't tested it yet. No,
okay.
What's it like?
So it's quite fun. So the controller, as you know, how the old console had like it would just shake, right?
Oh yeah, the vibrating.
Yeah, the rumble of vibrating, and it was just like one vibrator, right?
Right.
Yeah, never say that again.
Okay.
And then the PlayStation 5 controller, every kind of piece of it rumbles. Ah, that's what it's supposed to be. It rumbles in a different way and kind of creates sounds and whatnot. So, for example, the triggers, like there's this little game called Astro Playground, and it's kind of to teach you about everything that the console have, and it's like going down memory lane of consoles.
Do you have you played Assassin's Creed on both systems, and did you see any kind of difference or a preference?
You know what? It does, because I feel that I haven't played consoles in a long time. I don't know about you, but the step up in graphics and just overall loading, the loadings are inexistent. There's no more loading. Like,
really?
They're open. Yeah, you teleport and it just like happens.
That was my biggest, that's always my biggest gripe. Well, I have two gripes with console gaming. One is the loading screens. Like Destiny was fully unplayable for me personally on Xbox.
Oh, really?
The loading screen took so long. I don't know if I'm just super impatient. But whatever it is, like it drove me nuts. Like I had a problem like just staying in and staying interested because sometimes the loading screens take so long. And the second thing is like the controllers often feel big for my hands. Like I kind of wish game developers, I know there's the adaptive controller that's made for people who have different kinds of disabilities, but I wish they just made one a little bit smaller just for people with smaller hands. Like, do they make a kid size one?
I don't think.
like so official.
You might like the PlayStation one. It's definitely smaller than the Xbox one. The Xbox is really similar to the other versions. It fits perfectly. Like, it's a really great controller already. But I'm really impressed with the PlayStation one. I hated the other ones. I couldn't stand the controllers and the other ones. So this is much better. This is a pretty good improvement.
And no loading screens.
Well, they are, probably, but some, they're like... They're like 1 second. It's incomparable. Like, you're in a open world on Spider-Man and you're trying to teleport or fast travel, you know?
Yeah.
From like opposite sides of the city that they have to load. There's no way it's like preloaded or anything. And it's like you press and it goes like, and then you land in the loading screen and where you are.
That's
cool. You're supposed to be. And I'm just like, what? That was so fast. So that's really impressive. Yeah. So I don't know. I just like gaming on the couch.
Do you guys have gaming on the couch? Two areas set up so one of you can be playing PlayStation, the other's playing Xbox? Or are they both on the same television?
No, you have two setups, but I'm seriously considering, they're not in the same room. And I'm seriously considering buying a second TV in the same room, but damn, it would look so ugly.
That is kind of the problem, right? Like, unless you were to build something in the middle of the room where you can put a TV on either side and make it so they're sort of facing each other like that.
Yeah.
You could do something.
There's that, or like maybe like a version of like if they were right next to each other. I don't know, but it looks so ugly. My parents did that for a long time. They had like two TV next to each other in the living room because they would like want to watch sports and like a soap opera at the same time. And it was quite ugly, but I really embraced them for it. Like, props to them to just say like
utility,
comfort and utility over being like fancy, or I can't do that.
Yeah. It has to be, I don't need it to be nice. Yeah. Same here. It has to be cute. It has to be really cute. Which reminds me, by the way, just because we said it's really cute, I think you're a fan of the show, but I've been binge watching Schitt's Creek. And I'm on season 3. They say, you know, that's cute all the time. But anyway, I saw you tweeting about it one time, and I'm obsessed. We have been watching episode after episode. Like, Moira Rose is one of the best characters, maybe of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that quite frankly, might be the best performance on a TV comic ever.
It's so funny. Like, she has me so dying laughing.
We cannot say baby anymore here in the Harvey household. It's bebe. Please, let's get bebe in the house.
Oh, I love her wigs so much. My sister told me that the wigs, she names them all after her real life friends.
It's I'm obsessed. So good.
I'm sure I'm late.
So much in the the season is over. Like, everything you find on Netflix, like it's concluded. It concluded in 2020, and there's a documentary at the end that recaps last filming of the last season, and I'm crying the whole time. Like, I'm just crying the whole time. It's so Canadian. The whole thing is so Canadian. Oh my god, it's so
that's
good.
That's right. They're all Canadian. That's right. Catherine O'Hara.
The whole thing is so cute. And I quite frankly love the little Alexis mimics. I do them all the time. Nope, 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 nope.
Nope, nope. She's like this all the time. Nope. Like, with her hands, with her like wrists over the side.
I'm always doing that now. In meetings. Nope, nope, nope.
I love it.
It's really good. You get attached to every single character. It's quite awesome.
Oh my gosh, totally.
I'm glad you like it.
I'm obsessed. I mean, like, we're really seriously watching 3 to 4 episodes a night, and I keep saying to my husband, like, what's gonna happen when it's over? Like, what am I gonna watch?
I know. The have you seen the wine metaphor yet with
and he says it's I don't care about the label, I care about the wine.
Yeah, that was brilliant. I like red wine, I like white wine.
That was brilliant.
Okay. When you watch the end, the documentary at the end,
it'll hit me in the feels.
Yeah. Because let me I have shivers. Let me just let you know, and for our listeners as well, is that in the series, it was written by him, right? And he never addresses a difference in an uncomfortable way. It's always already accepted. So when he like has a boyfriend or gets married, it's everyone just accepts it. Like, and then people of color, they're just all accepted. Like, there's never a character that puts you in a situation where they disagree with it, and then they're asked,
or they're judging.
It's never like that. Yeah. There's never a situation where they're judging people for their gender identity, their sexual orientation, the color of their skin, like anything like that, for being a woman or a male. Like, everyone believes everybody can do everything. The only time they judge is about like actions or comments or, you know, like things like that.
Behavior. Right. Yeah. Like choices.
I can't recall any other show that make me feel that way, where there's like a complete acceptance of the fact that you can be bi, you can be bi.
Well, especially for sexual orientation specifically, like this show, because it doesn't call it out really, except for maybe that moment, just to sort of say, like, you know, I don't like the label, I like the wine. There was something really powerful about that, because it wasn't pandering. It just is what it was. And I really appreciate the show. Like, and you're right. It doesn't define itself by that. It just sort of, it defines itself by its hilarious comedy and the writing and the family and the connection between all of them. Like I'm a big fan of that troupe of performers anyway, with like Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara. Like, I love Best in Show and all of their, you know, movies that they've done forever. And I just love it. But that's what I've been watching, like binging like crazy. And I wanted to tell you, because I saw you tweeting about Moira one time.
I love it. I keep thinking about it, and I'm so sad it's over. But I understand why, but I'm so sad.
Well, you can live vicariously through me, because I'm sure I will be talking about it.
Okay. Like, we'll talk about it every week.
Yeah. I'll be like, okay, I watched the one. Like, we just finished the one where she went to like the car dealership and like put on this crazy accent, and like, I'll be honest, like, I'm sure my mother will hear this, but like, it kind of reminded me of my mom a little bit, and it was so funny.
She's such a good actress. Apparently she kind of created like the character of her own. The wig thing she added, she wanted to wear wings, you know, like there's a lot of things that she chose.
There's like a nod to like Delia Dietz too, it feels like, with the black and white outfits from
and
Beetlejuice.
Every outfit that she have is actually couture. Like, it's not just like whatever. They're all like actually branded things that they had to find with limited budget. And, you know, so it was quite,
you can tell it's a labor of love. Like, there are shows like that. I kind of hope they get a movie, to be honest. It seems like they had 6 seasons. So it should be about the 6th season and a movie. You know, or is it 7 seasons in a movie?
No, I think it's six seasons
in a movie. Yeah. Like the Sex and the City thing.
La la.
My sister listened to our podcast last week, and she made a correction on me, and it's a funny correction. So SimCity, the game that I said we played on my Apple II, we did have an Apple II, but we were playing it on the Super Nintendo hooked up to the computer monitor. So in my head, I think it's a computer game, but apparently we were playing it on Super Nintendo. And the reason they hooked it up to the computer monitor was because at that time in, you know, 1993, they were afraid that the video game images would burn onto the television screens. So my parents were like, you cannot have that. You need to put it on this other screen in the computer room. And that's, so we had the computer on one part of the desk, and then the Super Nintendo hooked up to another computer monitor in the room.
That's gold.
Do you remember that? Like, people being worried that it would burn the screen? Oh, yeah.
No, I've never heard that in my life. Oh, yeah. So I'm quite...
There are people my age who are going to be listening to this going like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I remember.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, la la.
Apparently, I also
I've never heard of that.
I also mispronounced Montessori, not Montessori. I was saying it very fancy. But well, it's Montessori. You
know, she's it's because it's your sister. She's being that picky because
I know. Well, she didn't tell
me
that one.
I mispronounce every two words. See, I can't even say that. So, so and she probably did not kept a list. So here's all the things that she said wrong.
Yeah. We had someone write us on Twitter actually, who lost their home in that fire as well.
No way.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. It was a woman, and she said that her, I think it was a condo she said that she had. Her building was one of the first that perished in that fire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I still, every time we think about that, I still don't know what I would do. I think I would probably move to like a beach house. Not a beach house, a beach town. In like a hut and sell sushi.
You know? That's what you would do? Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I have no more belongings. I can go anywhere I want. I don't have the game piles anymore and stuff.
Have you ever made sushi?
No, but apparently it's not that easy. So
just obtain a new skill.
I know, right?
It's kind of a crazy weekend with some of the news. Yeah. I know kind of affected you directly. The Ubisoft thing that happened with the potential ransom situation. What ended up happening with that? And are you okay?
That was a rough one. So for those who didn't hear, probably if you're from Canada, you're living under a rock because it was everywhere. But Ubisoft Montreal got into like a kind of an hostage situation, or at least hostage situation phone call to the police. And as far as we know so far, it looked like it was premeditated and it looked like it was with intentions of harming, because the people that did the call were inside the office and they were hiding behind redirecting IPs and whatnot. So,
oh wow.
And then it was pretty serious, especially since the call said that it was inside the office, that there was people being hostage, and the police arrived, SWAT team arrived, the whole neighborhood was shut down. There was two live TV stations here in Quebec following the development. People were trapped in meeting rooms on the roof, and there was
the rooftop images. There were like 40 people standing up there.
The helicopter was filming live that my friends on the rooftop. It was pretty dramatic. And when it happened, we had so little info, right? That like people were like inside the office, barricaded themselves into meeting rooms. I was getting like pictures of my friends from meeting rooms or at the rooftop videos, and everyone was just like freaking out. And I've been like, for me, some of the people at Ubisoft Montreal are like a chosen family, like people I'll never lose contact with and that I still talk to. So it was very, very difficult. And I feel that with all of the pressure of what's going on in my life, I kind of cracked. It's like everything at the same time exploded, and when I opened the gate of crying, it just wouldn't stop. And I cried for like hours watching the TV live, shaking, and I kind of had like a tiny panic attack, I would guess. I say tiny because I was safe, I was home, I was I was able to control it as much as I could. So I'll call it a tiny because it didn't harm me, but I think it took me. So that happened Friday. We're filming on Sunday because we're supposed to film Friday when it happened. And you guys are so sweet and let me cover. So,
I mean, that's traumatic, you know, either to go through or even to watch if you have loved ones in that situation. I mean, it was harrowing just to follow online, and I don't personally know very many people at Ubisoft. I don't think anyone that was in the building. So, you know, my heart definitely goes out to you and all to all the developers that went through that. Like, that's just that's a scary situation, no matter, you know, if the threat was, you know, persistent or not.
And I have to say props to the employees involved, props to the Montreal police. I've told multiple people in my life that, you know, I feel that our police system is definitely not perfect, but I do feel there's a better training, or at least a good training in place here that allows for these kind of situations to be done without harm. Like, it felt like they were in control the whole time. Even if we didn't know what was going on, I never felt like
that's good.
People were not running with guns and like Molotovs and like, you know, it was just like, it's on lockdown. We're not telling you any information. And, but you saw SWAT like quietly go in and like, it felt in control and nobody was hurt.
I think that was part of it, that information lockdown. It felt like, you know, people were kind of tweeting about it, but it didn't seem like employees were like really giving much away. They would say, I'm okay, but they weren't. Right. And maybe that's a good thing that people just, you know, keep it on the low, keep it contained. Like a lot of times situations get completely blown out of situation or like make it worse because it's on social media. So it was nice to see that people were being really responsible with it too. I mean, obviously there were a lot of jerks online. Sent an email.
I couldn't believe the things I saw. But Ubisoft sent an email at some point, like close your phone, like put your phone on silent, you know, find a safe place, hide, and we'll keep you updated, right? Yeah. And then they send like another email at some point or however to communicate nowadays. And they said like SWAT team is going through each floor and you're going to get out in groups, you know? So they were getting like live updates where they were. And you know, this is the kind of things, think about it, Michelle, like 20 years ago, nobody would have a cell phone.
No. You would just be hiding, you know, it's like the movie Die Hard, you know, you're just like literally like hoping the only communication is really the people that are holding you. There is no way to really know what's going on. Like it's a complete hostage situation.
So are you going to kill me? Well, if at I least say like I've that's never what seen they, Die Hard.
What? Oh my God. Wow. Jeez. Okay. This is definitely, it is a Christmas movie, so it's a perfect time for you to familiarize with yourself with this movie. It's one of the greatest Christmas movies of all time.
It's actually a Christmas movie?
It is a Christmas movie.
Okay.
So it's perfect. Right. Perfect timing.
It is indeed.
But the point is like all the people that are held captive in there, they're like, they cut the phone lines. There's no way for anybody to communicate. They didn't have, you know, computers in their pockets at that time.
Danny is saying that he watched it yesterday for the first time.
He did? Oh, look at the eyes. That he...
Is that true? You watched it yesterday for the first time? Well, Christmas movie. I watched three in the last night. I watched three last night. I was like on a...
Three last night?
Which I was ones? In a spiral of watching romantic
romantic stuff. Comedies?
Yes. On Netflix. And I watched The Holiday.
Nice. Which I don't know one yet.
Okay, so they all just kind of came out, as far as I know, in 2020. I watched The Holiday, I watched Love Guaranteed, and then I watched A Christmas Drop. Okay, and they were all kind of bad. Love Guaranteed was actually pretty bad, I thought, but I liked Guaranteed. The actor. Yeah, I like the actors, and so I thought, oh, that's probably really fun. And then
are these the Netflix originals?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and then The Holiday, it was actually kind of fun. It reminded me of How to Lose Your Guy in 10 Days.
Yeah, I love that movie. That,
you know?
Yeah.
Like a less good version of it. And then The Christmas Drop was Netflix original and everything. And
The Christmas it was Drop?
Drop, yeah. Hmm. And it's about like army people dropping care packages during Christmas, but it's like a romantic way of doing that. So, and it's actually true. So at the end they say like, oh, The Christmas Drop has been going on for like 45 years and blah, blah, blah. So
that's cool.
It was okay. I like learning about the Christmas drop, not really the movie. But I was just in a binge watch of like, I want to feel love. Right, hey, after the Ubisoft thing, I couldn't,
of course,
like, I needed love.
It's like a perfect, yeah, it's balm for the soul. I love all of the, you know, kind of dumb Christmas movies. I think they're super fun. Like, my girlfriends and I usually get together and watch Hallmark Christmas movies or the Netflix ones together during this year. So now, like, I think we're going to do a Netflix party. There's that, like, extension you can do, and everybody can, yeah, like, sync the movie and use chat at one time. We did it on my birthday, and it was so fun. So I think we're going to do it for some of the Christmas originals this year. There's
you should
the...
try. All the day is was my favorite of the three I just mentioned.
Okay, okay. Did, yeah. They had, last year, there was one with, like, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn. It was really good.
Oh, I need to watch that one. Okay, okay.
It was good. It was a great, just, like, basic Christmas movie that, yeah, was super fun to watch. And I think it might have been Hallmark, I think, The Christmas Prince. Or was that,
never seen,
or
it,
was it Netflix? Oh, it's great. It's like about a girl who meets a prince. It's like the most ridiculous, like, none of us should be on board with this. Like, it's, none of us should be on board, but I'm like, pass me the popcorn. I'm gonna watch this for hours. I am.
Okay,
but I love stuff
what?
Like that.
Okay, I have. Let's do like a rapid fire of like random facts we learned this week, because we need to jump into our stories at some point. Did you know that Scarlett Johansson got married last weekend?
No. Yeah. So what's his name, like, from the SNL guy?
Yeah, she got married to SNL
Colin Jost.
Writer.
Colin
and
Jost.
I was listening to Seth Meyers interview John Mulaney, and he was
funny.
Like, did you know that Scarlett was getting married to their friend, because it's their friend? And then they got both upset, but as a joke, they were like, first of all, we didn't get invited during COVID. And then second, they said, I didn't know you could flirt with talent. Like, what is that thing? We didn't know you could, like he just swoops in Scarlett Johansson's like that. Like, what the hell? We thought we were just hosts. It was kind of funny. Okay, so that's a random fact I learned.
They're a very cute couple.
They seem like super genuine.
Actually, this last Saturday Night Live this last week was awesome. It was Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, I need to watch that. Yeah,
it was Dave. Well, I guess one happened last night now, but it was Dave Chappelle and the Foo Fighters, which, ooh, I am a huge Foo Fighters fan. And yesterday, my husband got me tickets, the two of us, to watch their show at the Roxy, which is like a big club here on the
tickets?
Sunset Strip.
You think you're going to watch a show again in your
We're just
life?
In the living room. And like, Dave Grohl was super cool, and he had like, he had everybody sing. Usually when he sings the song My Hero, the audience will sing the song with him. So he had this whole part where he's like, let's just share this awkward energy and sing in your home. So we totally did that. We were like just belting it out, pretending,
cute,
trying to trick our minds into thinking we were actually at a show. But it was, it, look, even if we're not there, it was so important, I feel like, to still experience live music and to watch it, even if it's in this like bizarre live stream kind of way, it still
oh
was.
Oh my God, I need to tell you. Do you know, I work for the Madison Square Garden with CLG, right? And they do live events, but every Thursday now, they get a guest musician, and we do like a 30 minute where they sing from their home with the guitar.
Oh, and cool.
2 weeks ago, it was Walk Off the Earth, and I don't know if you know who they are, but
no,
they're
I don't.
One of my favorite band, and I was just fangirling like crazy. I had my cam on Zoom, and I was singing every song like this, and I was just like, ha!
Yes!
Like, it was amazing.
Yes.
It was so yes to live shows, and you might have seen them. They're on YouTube. They were YouTubers first, and they created...
What are they called again?
Walk Off the Earth, and they did the five-person, one guitar song. I don't know if you remember, of Somebody That I Used to Know.
Oh, and that song?
On the guitar? You've never seen that?
That is that the song, that old song, that song
it's
from like 15 years ago?
It's from...
That's them?
It's the song that
or they covered
out, like,
it?
They did a cover of that song, but it was like five musician, one guitar, and they're all doing the instrument on the same guitar. Anyway, Google them. They're amazing.
I will.
You're gonna get lost in their YouTube. You're gonna get lost on the YouTube for like four hours.
I'm excited. I've always liked music recommendations, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, Walk Off the Earth.
Okay, Walk Off the Earth. I am definitely gonna look it up. You know what we got, Steph? We got a letter. We got a diary entry.
A diary entry.
We did. Let's go. We got a diary entry. You want to hear it?
Yes.
So this comes to us from Lawrence. He emailed us. He said, "Dear Diary, I have several gaming stories that have led to different friendships, some projects, and some of the most unexpected experiences. While my stories are more of a series of experiences, my whole story doesn't have a linear beginning, middle, and end. And I'm thinking if I had to think about it in terms of a video game, I would make it something like The Legend of Zelda or Monster Hunter games.
Okay.
Where we see a piece of the overall saga, which hopefully doesn't sound too egotistical of me.
just a little bit.
Just a little bit. It's a saga. Yeah. It says, but while each of these tells a complete story, it's richer put together. And one of my biggest and favorites of all my stories involve cosplay and gaming, and it has to do with the Korean group Spiral Cats. And I looked up Spiral Cats. Do you know them?
Do you know why I know them?
No, tell me.
Because my agent is their agent.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
That's so random.
That's really funny. That's really funny. So they're do you want to describe who they are? They're like a...
No, I know nothing about them. I just know their name.
Spiral Cats. That's a cool name. So I looked them up. And they are a cosplay group.
Yeah.
And they're all female cosplay group from South Korea. The group was formed in 2009 by Tasha and Ren. In 2010, they were joined by two others. And they've done a bunch of different stuff. They've worked for like Blizzard and Riot and NCSoft and tons of different companies doing cosplays for them. So he says, that's so funny. So what a small world. What a small world.
That is so random. So, I know like two of his clients, and one of them is the Spiral Cats.
Spiral Cats. Anyway. I love the name, by the way. Yeah. I mean, it does have cats, so I love it. Okay, so I first met the Spiral Cats briefly at Anime Expo 2014, where I also met their translator for their panel, and I got his email. It turned out that he worked for Riot Games. I learned later that they would be coming for the North American finals in 2016, and I reached out asking about doing some photos with them around New York City and the Spiral Cats, which would make some awesome content. And it was at the time of the arcade skins for League of Legends. It was set up and done.
I got a lot of those.
Yeah, those are really cool. Those are my favorites for sure. I think I have misfortunes. The setup was one and done in a day through email. That night, I did some of my favorite photos and made several new friends. And actually, his photos were covered on Kotaku, which is really cool. Yeah.
Fun.
Then in 2019, the Spiral Cats reached out to ask if I was going to Anime Expo that year and to get more photos. And I actually was. My booking things for Anime Expo was pretty last minute, but it was super fun. And we got more great photos. When the pandemic is over, they want me to visit Korea and they'll show me all the cool things. Known for her Horizon Zero Dawn Alloy cosplay, Marilia and I became friends and offered to be her guide at PAX East 2018. Many people I know, many people know her from her Horizon Zero Dawn cosplay. Sorry, there's a little bit of redundant right here. Says, I also met one of my favorite streamers, Vanessa XX Fruitcake XX, who is fun to run Monster Hunter with. It was a fun experience. I enjoyed introducing her to PAX and what it had to offer. This would not have happened without both of us doing things in games and being inspired by them. I once made a joke on Twitter to see to one of the community people about making bounty posters for the game One Piece World Seeker. It's a mobile game I looked up. Okay. I've signed several for the launch for some well-known cosplayers, including Vampy Bitme, Rogers Base, and Reagan Catherine, and these were used in launch. So this was the first video game launch that I got to be a part of. And in 2020, though I have been working to grow my own streaming and have been doing engineering for Sonny Strait. If that name sounds familiar, it's the anime voice actor Sonny Strait. I engineer for his wonderful acting class. And as a part of the build for his Twitch channel, I have streamed for him using my own equipment and games. We have done 2 SonnyCam events so far, SonnyCon events so far, and I have streamed a good amount of Dragon Ball FighterZ on his channel for him. My streaming work got his channel to Twitch affiliate. It's one of those things that you never think you would ever do ever. This is something that I see with many stories with people in pop culture. You have the opportunity to do cool things. I've done video, photos, and now engineering and streaming for so many that have been seminal in creating pop culture as we know it and who have amazing legacies while still creating and working to help create and definitely inspire the next generation of creators. So all because of gaming from Lawrence.
Because of gaming from Lawrence. What a cool story. Yeah. I like it. It's so random.
Yeah. It is, because it is like a, like, it's just sort of like there's this experience and that experience and this one, and those things kind of all built to kind of put me where I'm at. He also kind of mentions he's looking for work right now and stuff. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, I want to just say to Lawrence, because he did kind of write it in his letter to us, there was an extra part of it, talked about like looking for work and having trouble finding work right now in the pandemic. I just want to tell you, Lawrence, like, you're not alone. We're all kind of going through that right now in general. Like, I won't speak for Ms. Harvey because she is like the busiest person I know. But I mean, work has slowed down for everybody. So don't beat yourself up about it. Keep your head up, you know, continue to like connect with people in your community. That's always what served you well. And just stay as positive as you can out there. Because we all need to just like summon that strength of spirit as much as we can. So, you know, stay positive. And I'm sure, you know, I've seen you online and around for years and years. So I really wish the best to you. You're going to be just fine. Thank you so much for writing us.
Thank you so much. If you want to be like Lawrence and send us your story, I think that the link is just thegamediaries.com, right?
Right.
I don't even know our own link.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
thegamediaries.com. Go there. Perfect. And you can send your story to us. We would love to read it on air. So speaking of stories, Steph, I am so excited for your story this week. I forgot who you were doing. So I'm very much looking forward to this.
So the person I took today, it's another game designer. But for some reason, it's one that's very special to me, although I don't, like, I've never met her, never talked to her, never even interacted with her on Twitter. I wanted to talk about her story. The person I pick is Jane McGonigal.
Oh, I love her. She's really great.
Yeah, I'm glad I played her game. Know about her.
Yeah, I've interviewed her too. She's awesome. Oh, I can't wait to know more.
You met her?
I've interviewed her. I mean, I guess over, you know, screens. We weren't in person.
Wow. Then maybe you should have made that story. Anyway,
I've just talked to her once. I know like some of her story, but I don't know like the genesis of certain things.
Okay,
I'm really interested in this.
Well, maybe we have it in to get her on the show because you know about her. But so she's a pretty special designer for me because when I was studying video game design, I think we talked about this last week. I have an architecture bachelor, but then after that, I went to game design, and it was a mix of theoretical and practical, right? So we had a lot of the story of game design and just like playing in humans. What does playing mean? Not necessarily like in games, but just overall and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I loved her research. I kept looking at her research. I don't know why. I got really inspired by the things she did. And throughout her career, she thinks that a game designer should be committed to the ideas that kind of games should change the world. Yeah. Whatever that means, right? That maybe it means that we can create a game that will help us just be better humans, or help us with global warming, or, you know, like a bunch of things. And this is what she did in her career. And we're going to talk about it a little bit more. But I think that especially when she became extremely relevant, she was pretty young, under her 30s. And she was in an era where gaming was not seen as positive, right? Gaming was very marginalized and hidden and underground and negative. And, you know, we kept talking about how games were the reason for mass murder and whatnot, you know? So it was 90s. In that era.
Yeah.
And in the
early 2000s,
she kind of was like, for me, a beacon of light, where she was saying gaming is essential for our future and playing is essential for our future. Mm-hmm. And games should be something good and not bad, right? So let's jump into her story a little bit. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
She has a PhD, so obviously I say respect, because you know, when you have a PhD in something, it impresses me, because you could be just working. At that point, you're Absolutely. Already smart, talented. You're already in a situation where you did your job. You did your part to learning something in life to make you independent, but you decide to do a PhD.
Yeah.
Just
so you take it further and just know as much as you possibly can about it. Yeah. To really become like a master, like a doctor really of it. So yeah, it's super impressive.
Yeah. And when she got her PhD, it was definitely like in their pioneers of people getting PhD in game design and in gaming, right? That wasn't like cool.
Is that what her PhD is in, game design?
I think her PhD is from what I saw, especially on their Wikipedia page, it's in performance studies at UC Berkeley. And I'm learning how to pronounce University of California's names now. I feel that I'm quite badass at it, because I worked in the last 2 weeks, I've worked with like every University of South California. So UCSA, UC Irvine, UC California,
UCSD. You know, so,
yeah. You know, UCSD, Santa Barbara,
UCLA,
LA, Berkeley. So now I'm like, I know how to pronounce university names.
She went to Berkeley for performance, like for acting, for drama?
Performance studies. And I think that she, it looks like it was about drama and whatnot.
Cool.
But she focused on, she focused that PhD into gaming, which was, she was one of the first
Very
in the world to do that. She was the first in the department, especially to study computer and video games in that department. So it was pretty unique.
My major is in acting.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. Why you're so mm-hmm. talented.
Yeah, that's why.
And you know how I found out about her? Okay, so my final, when I was in university, my final kind of paper and everything, we had to create a game from scratch and like really do all of the game design technical documents and whatnot. And we took my idea, we're a team of four, and my idea was, it came from her. She studied a lot the bonobos, like the primate, the animal.
Oh yeah.
And one of her good friend, Isabel Bancase, is a scientist that studies bonobos, and her and Jane worked together a lot on learning how to play and learning how bonobos play. And throughout their whole life, they learn about most things through play. So they copy what the other bonobos uh-huh. do. And that's how they, for generation and generation, they learn about, you know, how to protect themselves or how to eat or how to do like complex things, like use tools, like bonobos right. can use tools.
Sounds like they're like watching the motivations of the creature, which is like really kind of an acting study as well, like to really understand motivation. And then motivation then tells you why they're doing whatever action. That's interesting.
It's super interesting, because bonobos never, they're the closest to humans and animals, and they never stop learning and playing. They play their whole life. Even when they're adults, they resolve conflicts. They resolve even like wars between two tribes with playing. So it was quite interesting. And just to sum that little aparte, we made a game where there's no tutorials, no overlays, there's nothing. You were born a little bonobo, and you had to learn everything through either playing with your controller and figure things out, or watching another little Borobo do something and copying him. And if you found out something on your own, they would start copying you too.
Oh my gosh.
And then some of them would like progress through it. But pretty much the whole game was about, having empathy towards the other little bonobos, observing what they were doing, growing, figure out who you are within that.
That's really
tribes
cool.
And whatnot. So yeah,
so you,
it was inspired.
You designed
by her.
This?
Yeah.
Because of her. How did you find out she was like, she studied with bonobos?
I think that it probably was one of her talk. I know she did a couple TED Talks.
Yeah.
And I watched a couple of her talks and I started digging about her. And I found out that she was really impressed by bonobos. And I found out that bonobos never stopped playing. And that was super interesting to me. We were reading like all sorts of books, like Theory of Games and just like of play and whatnot. So
she
was
major.
Quite... Yeah, it was a pretty good inspiration. And she was kind of, she has always said that we should never stop playing. We should always play. As an adult, it's she calls it, in an old article magazine, she calls it in 2011, play is our adaptive wild card. So nice. Like, playing it allows us to learn about yourself, others, and grow and just like evolve. Because if it's a tryout, if it's through play, you're less scared to take a risk, less scared to make mistakes, like, you know? Yeah. So it's very interesting.
It gives you a commonality. It gives you understanding. Yeah, absolutely.
And she wrote a couple books throughout her career. One was Reality is Broken and one was Super Better. And Super Better is probably her most famous game. We'll get a little bit more into it because there was like a moment in her career where she actually was thinking about suicide. And that's what inspired Super Better. And 2009... So she was already doing game design. She got her PhD in 2006, but she started in 2004 to design games. In 2009, she suffered a major concussion, but her concussion was so big. It's definitely different than the concussion I got. I got two in my life, but hers was severe symptoms. So she had suicidal thoughts. She was always depressed. It's kind of a bunch of things that she didn't even know you could get when you had a concussion, and they were like permanent. And she decided at one point she reached a breaking point, and her doctor kind of told her, "You have to start getting better, or honestly, you will never get better." Like it was
scary.
This needs to happen now or else you're going to be stuck like this your whole life.
Yeah. So the way she got her concussion was she was in the kitchen and there was an open cabinet and she had kind of been down low and she knocked her head on the corner of it. And that's how she got. I think about it every time I have an open cabinet. I'm pretty sure that that's what's happened to her. It's crazy.
Oh my God, that's awful. That's
scary.
So like silly.
So
this
scary.
Is the kind of thing that would happen to me, to be quite frank. I truly, truly think that's awful for her. So she was actually a workaholic and a runner, and when she got that concussion, she was unable to read emails or leave her bed. Like it went from like all or nothing, right? And so she sank into depression, like I mentioned. And in that same interview, she said that until she started researching concussion, she didn't know that sudden depression and suicidal thoughts are symptoms. And so she became afraid to go on the roof because she was like, I kind of want to kill myself. So if I go on the roof, I'll probably do it.
Yeah.
So after a month of having all these symptoms, that's when her doctor told her that, she was either recover soon or never, which now I look back, I don't know if I'm not a doctor, but I always think like the brain is so weird. I don't know if it was like an ultimatum for her, but she decided at that point that I'm going to turn my experience into a game and try to be better or kill myself.
Yep.
if that doesn't work.
Wow.
So she was at that point.
I mean, injuries like that can really, really screw with your entire, just your entire conscious life. Like that's so scary. Because the last thing you want to do is, especially, you know, somebody that seems to really love research and to be interested in others, to not be able to have the same ability to connect would be heartbreaking.
I see where she's coming from. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. And so she started to create a game called Jane the Concussion Slayer.
Yeah.
And
so
that was
cool. I love the name.
And then she renamed it to Super Better, the name of her second book, but also just overall the game shipped as Super Better. During that time is also when she started writing about her first book. That was in 2010. So she had the concussion in 2010. That's when she did her first book, Reality is Broken. And she was reading a lot about gaming, how she thinks that gaming is not a way to escape our reality or avoid problems. And she thinks that gaming is one of the most useful thing that we can do with our time. Mm-hmm. So she was ahead of the time, definitely. I think, when it comes to these kind of conclusion. Do you like, as a gamer in 2020, do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, definitely. That
gaming is not a waste of time?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Jane McGonigal, I remember seeing her be interviewed by Stephen Colbert when she did Reality is Broken. She was doing like a book tour and I watched that episode. That's the first time I became familiar with her, and watched that interview and then found her TED Talk that I got into. And at that time in my life, her work was really influential to me, that book and that game. Because I had suffered like a really, really bad injury. Like, I don't know how much you kind of know about it, but like in like 2007, I was behind the scenes on a movie, and it was like if you wanted to come day. It wasn't like a mandatory day. It was just a behind the scenes kind of day if you want to come. So I did. And there was like an air ram thing there, which is kind of like you step on it and it flings you up into the air. And they use it in like car explosions for stunts and whatever. So I stood on it and it flung me up like, I don't know, 12, 15 feet. And then I landed on my head. And my husband and I think we'd been dating for 8 months at the time. Now we've been together for 14 years. But like at the time, I landed on my head. I remember when I landed and it hurt really bad. And I think I went out for a second, but I ended up with like a really small fracture in my neck, and my clavicle and my first rib had sandwiched together. So they had to remove my first rib out of like in a surgery because I had to wear a neck brace for probably like a year. All of my, like at that point I had been acting and doing movies and, you know, and that kind of stopped everything. Like I gained a bunch of weight, like I want to say like 35, 40 pounds, bless you. And I just like lost who I was, you know, and I would look in the mirror. I feel so depressed. And like, just like, it just felt like there was no end in sight, no surgery that could help, nothing that would like alleviate the pain. And I got really into video games because of that. Bless you.
Excuse me. I don't want to distract you.
No, it's
You're
fine.
Doing great. This is a great story.
Oh God. It's like, because I didn't have anything to do, my husband got me a copy of World of Warcraft Burning Crusade. Well, first I was playing God of War and God of War 2 and, you know, a bunch of like Xbox and PlayStation games. But I really got into World of Warcraft because the story helped me kind of escape the mentality that I was in and helped me kind of heal and get to a better point. Like I was going out and stuff, but I was having to wear a neck brace everywhere I went. And I was going through fainting spells too. So I'd be like out in public and I would have like a really bad, I would have anxiety attacks and panic attacks and I would just faint. And then that's bad too. Cause then it hurts. You don't know how you're going to fall. But you know, gaming really helped me connect with myself again. And there was in World of Warcraft in particular, Lady Sylvanas, who's the character that I love so much. They're ruining now, but that character that she really helped me get out of that, because I saw video games as healing. I saw it as a benefit for people. So that's when I started writing a lot about it. And I saw Jane McGonigal on Colbert, and I wrote an article about Super Better because I ended up downloading her game. Oh. And I don't know at what point exactly, but I got her game, and that helped me. I used that every day to try to just like get myself out of this headspace that was so negative. Really did. She, when I met her, I think I fangirled on her a little bit too much. Like I was just like, thank you so much. She's really chill. You know, so anyway, that era is when I became familiar with her, which is, it was a perfect time in my life for me to get familiar with her, because I was going through these things, trying to explain how gaming feels like a healing thing. And nobody is really saying that back to me, except for Jane McGonigal, who has like research and she's committed herself to it. And not only that, but like also used gaming to overcome her own injury. So it was just very important work, you know, and very early.
I love that she both had a huge impact in her life.
Yeah.
I like to think like from each side, like for me, it was as a creator, as someone that does thing. And for you, it was like the as end, a survivor, I want to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Like why she makes games, and you were there. You're like, I can make games like this too. Yeah. It's fascinating. That's
amazing. Mm-hmm. And throughout, like when she did, when she wrote Reality is Broken, like she did a lot of research about positive psychology. And it focuses on what makes life worth living.
Yeah.
And I feel that was so important for her, because according to her, video games actually provoke emotion that makes us happy and productive. And I kind of feel that gaming had that impact in my life.
Absolutely.
Where like there's only this catalyst, like games for me, that allow me to do so much around it, right? To always kind of want to do more and be positive and use game as a gathering point, as a learning thing, as a teamwork thing. And then when I think about Counter-Strike, like I was telling Max the other day that I've never played team sports in my life.
Really?
I've only played solo sports, figure skating, tennis, swimming, diving. Like I was into every solo sports ever, but I never really liked team sports. And it wasn't before Counter-Strike that I had, like before Counter-Strike, I didn't know how to be a team player. Yeah,
you hadn't been introduced to it. Like all of the little things that you need to learn. Like that's why it's important kids learn early. Yeah. Cause you want to be able to like, know how do I work with somebody else? We have to play together.
That without CS, I would probably be a very self-centered individual, where I was a lonely child. I didn't like to depend on people. I still don't like to depend on people. But now I feel that I'm a little bit better at working with a team and understanding how to be a positive leader and all that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, to circle back to Jane, it feels like she's known that for a long time. Yeah. And she's been trying to push game designers and players to think about that when they make or play games. Mm-hmm. Like all the process in the problem solving that you have to do in a game, she thinks that it helps us solve real problems in real life as well.
It does.
When I say real problems, I hate when we say like real life stuff, in-game stuff, but you know, in this context, we kind of have to talk about it that way.
Right, because it's more about the relationship you have with it, right? And how that transfers between, environments, yes.
One of her tech talk, she said in one of it, the one that's called Gaming Can Make a Better World. She says, if we want to solve problems like hunger, poverty, climate change, global conflict, and even a bit obesity, we can aspire to play online games for at least 20 billion hours a week by the end of the next decade. And she was saying that at the moment that she did that talk, we were only playing 3 billion hours of games a week. So we needed to play 7 times more to be able to solve these issues. So that was really interesting.
How many hours are we at nowadays?
Good question. Yeah. I have no idea.
Because this would have been almost a decade later, right? Like what time? Yeah, what year was this talk, the TED Talk?
2010. So it's 10 actually years. 10 years ago. Oh my God. I saw this 10 years ago. That's actually crazy. So yeah, so it'd be interesting to see the numbers now. So let us know in the comment if you found that somewhere.
And by the way, if there's anyone out there who has not seen this TED Talk, I feel like this is required watching for gamers. Yeah. Like I think I've told dozens and dozens of people, I mean hundreds probably, because I've said it on streams, like to watch Shane McGonigal's TED Talks, like especially the one you're talking about.
Super important.
Yeah.
Jane did a lot of games, but she's pretty intense into alternate reality games, which I didn't know was a term before. It's called ARG, and it's kind of like the version of an RPG where you don't play a character, you play yourself in a fictional environment. So you have a real world persona, which is Stephanie, but you do online tasks that are fictional or not. I mean, it depends on the game. Mm-hmm. So that's mainly the main difference between RPG and ARG.
Right. It's like the connection of real life self in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're designed to trigger certain emotional responses in the players. So one of our biggest game was called Lost Ring. It was released in 2008. 3 million people played that game.
That's awesome.
And it was pretty much you were road tripping across the world trying to find a secret object. So isn't that cool?
Like, I
love people
that.
Were playing a little bit across the world everywhere. And did you know also that she has a twin sister? I know this is completely unrelated, but I had no idea. Yeah, and she talks about it in that Elle interview. She has a twin sister named Kelly. And she thinks that having similar tasks and a shared experience through a game is really the hallmark of a Jane game. That's how she called it,
cute.
To get people to do strange thing, but at the same time, make them feel like they're doing the coolest thing in the world with a purpose with other people. I've never played any kind of game like that. The only game that I can think of that's remotely close as that would be like Pokemon Go. Connected to people in real life, and you had to like go
battle the gyms together.
You were still playing a character, but physically you had to
like
move.
Wizards
to
Unite
things.
Is like that too, the Harry Potter version of that.
So anyway, she worked on a couple of games like that, even like a prerequisite to Halo 2 called I Love Bees. I had no idea
I love bees that.
Yeah. So she created an ARG, The Beast, which was I Love Bees. Then she sent that to the studio, 42 Studio Entertainment, that did Halo 2. And that's when she created I Love Bees. Anyway, so she's been a little bit everywhere. And a couple of years later, she was named one of the young innovators under 25 by the MIT.
Dang.
And our work, our ideas, that game could change the world. It was all of a sudden becoming pretty serious. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about when she got her concussion. So she was trying to beat loneliness, anxiety, and depression instead of kind of killing herself.
Yeah.
So she started, like before she started making a game, she started like creating a real life version of it. So she would tell everyone in her life to create tasks for her that she had to do to be able to like pass the day. So for example, our sister would call her and say, look outside the window and spend time enjoying the view. That's a mission.
Yeah,
and then when she
I did that mission. That's a good mission.
You did?
Yes, that was literally one of them. And it was one of the reasons I wanted to move out of the apartment that my boyfriend at the time and I had shared, like, was because I wanted to be able to sit next to the window and the only winds we had were kind of up high. So I remember that task. So I would go outside instead. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of her tasks.
It's a good task.
And like walking in the apartment or in her house, mm-hmm. her husband would tell her, you walk until there, I'll give you points. If you walk further, I'll give you more points. Like these kind of things. And she thought that the symptoms were the bad guys and all the little missions were like towards into making her better.
Yeah.
Like playing with her dog was a power up. You know, like a little yes. bit of things. And then so she created Super Better out of that. It you was cool. You played it.
Yeah, I played it. And it was cool because it would tell you what it was doing. So like play with a dog or, you know, I would like play with my cat. And it would tell you afterward, like what the psychological benefits to doing that is. So like, or if you sit outside and you look outside for X amount of minutes, it stimulates X, Y, and Z that helps you. So it explains like why it's important, even though it seems like a really little task. If you're really hurting and trying to heal, those little things are so important to be like, okay, I feel like I'm doing something. Cause you spend so much of your time feeling like you're not doing anything and there's no hope. So you start to go, oh, if I just do that, that can, then that way I do actually hold hope inside of me for 5 minutes or however amount of time that really like affects you.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. I liked that she explained it like as it went, made you feel, it made me feel, responsible to it in a way, like it was a tool that I could use in my real life, which is the ARG. Yeah.
She says that the concept of the game, you can tell me if you thought it was clear when you played it, was that it was a structure of two simple things. The first one was set yourself a goal and create a support network around you to reach that goal. And she says that these two simple things is where people fail, mm-hmm. and that's why they can't heal. And the game was designed to make you learn to do that, creating your goals and a support system to help you do these goals.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really quite awesome.
It is.
I kind of want to play the game, but these are the kind of things I never know. Cause you watching a movie, a lot of movies don't age. Like you can watch like Die Hard and it's still good, right?
Yes, it is.
But sometimes games don't evolve. There's a definite period of time when we learn to do 3D that these games are now look like trash.
So yeah, that's true.
I kind of want to go back and play that air game, but I'm scared I'm going to be like stuck into like whatever it looks like.
It's an interface more like. It's not okay. Like there's no like guy that's fighting or whatever. It's just like tasks, and it's actually a really clean user interface, I thought.
Okay. So maybe I'll go check it out.
Yeah, you should. Actually, you should, because I'd love to hear what you think about it. Like, I mean, it really helped me. I haven't opened it for, you know, a decade probably, or maybe a little less than that. But yeah.
She has a really cool quote. The best game designers in the world should want to make game that unleash the power of people to do something extraordinary. So, and she quotes World of Warcraft in that. She says, I'd like to see people who invented the greatest games of our time. So remember that was from a 2012 article. World of Warcraft, Super Mario, Angry Birds turned to a field of doing something extraordinary. Every game designer should at least make one explicit world-changing games. Lawyers do pro bono work. Why shouldn't we?
Oh, very cool. Yes.
That is really cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it is.
And I completely agree with it.
It does really, it comes from a place of just really deeply understanding the power of game design, you know, which I don't think necessarily everyone understands, you know, but
no,
these are systems that we agree to play with and we spend a lot of time with, you know, kind of like when we were talking about the other week, like with Will Wright saying it programs your mind, you know, as you're moving along, as we're also working with the player as a computer itself. And it seems like she's understanding that as well, that the mind is part of it. And if you can give somebody sort of these goals and this supportive environment, that as they do it, it will help heal them and help actually alter their own state. which is sci-fi and also really
yeah
extraordinary and beautiful if used one in the right the direction.
Yeah.
Well, it's coming at some point.
Yeah.
Some point.
That touched me the most was she made a game called Word Without Oil, and that game was only available for 32 days.
Okay, what was it?
A group of 2,000 players had to simulate a peak oil crisis that took a near apocalyptic turns before humanity was prevailed. And I think that's really awesome. So the game went live, and then people had to collaborate without oil. And then 32 days later, they successfully kind of prevailed humanity and it was shut down. Like the game experiment was shut down. So wow. We can't play that game anymore. But I find it very, very interesting. And for me, the idea of leveling up your life by tapping into the strategies we use to win at games, whether it's like teamwork, small quest, optimism, like the things that she taught us, it's really inspiring. And I feel that with the games that we play now, they're designed to give us an experience, whatever that experience here is, right? Mm-hmm. To create entertainment. And we often don't have the same, well, obviously budget or interest kind of mentality reach. When it comes to creating games for change mm-hmm. and reach, which is extremely interesting. And I think that with the Twitch years now, serious games and ARG games could be different. There's something about the interactivity that Twitch gives us that if someone like Jane decides to jump on that train, there's something there I feel could teach us how to do something better. Like even if it was an add-on when you watch a stream and, you know, it taught you something or it helped you. You know, have you ever played that game that helped you had to help cancer research by like playing with DNA stuff?
I haven't played that one in particular, no.
So there was like there's something that cannot be automatic or computers can't do when it comes to like some research with DNA, and it has to always be manual. And tons of people like played the game for a couple minutes and all that data collected together, like pushed research a little bit further. So what if we collaborated together with Twitch? You know, there's definitely something there.
I agree with you. That is very interesting to think about with Twitch specifically. I remember when I used to be a writer for Hello Giggles, there was a company I did an organization that I did an article on called Games for Change, like specifically. They had like Nicholas Kristof and Maria Shriver and like people who are really into humanity and try to like make change in the world in particular. But they did a Facebook game where it was to try to educate, I believe, on hunger. I can't remember. It was like a decade ago.
Was it the Darfur?
Yes.
The Darfur game?
It was.
Oh my God.
That's right.
That was really interesting.
It was. I went to they had a reception here in Los Angeles. So I went and I met everybody and listened to them speak about it, like the game developers and the organizations and where everything was going. And like, it was pretty incredible to see this, like, I mean, there were people who were kind of naysayers because they were like, oh, you're just trying to do something on Facebook and to reach and blah, blah, blah. But I was like, I mean, you might as well. Like, there are all these people here to reach. And this is a topic that people should know more about. I think that there have been people on the edge of this for a long time. And then there's, of course, like kind of the core gamer group that sort of see it as one thing only and seeing it as like this is for a player's experience. Like they're not really thinking beyond. And it seems that now there is more opportunity for that. And I think there is already sort of like an inherent game-ish kind of thing with Twitch chat and with Discord and these different sort of interfaces that people are using now. I think you're right. Like, I mean, if Facebook could work.
I feel if we created the Twitch Plays Pokemon, we can definitely have Twitch Twitch save cancer, like, or cures cancer, you know,
yeah, like, just have to be like programmed there, right? This is when we have DJ Weed on and we're gonna be like, look, we came up with something, we came up on how to save the world, okay?
I wouldn't know, because the problem is this kind of thing, it has to be done with scientists, right? Yep. We just can't, like, we can't create it, so there's I think there's a need,
but takes a bunch of different kinds of different money. People to yeah. come in and say, but like, I yeah. think, I think you're right though. Jane would be a really good person to work on. Jane, we think, Jane, we think you should work on this. It'd be really yeah. cool, whatever you come up with.
And to kind of sum up our story, you know, she got a lot of paper done in the early 2010s and whatnot. So she, it'd be really interesting to have her here because I want to know what she's up to. I want to know what she thinks about everything that she's done. Does she still believe in Games for Change? You know, all the yeah. kind of these kind of things. And for me, it really did like a full circle. You were talking about Games for Change. That conference is also where I saw and heard about Jane the first time. And a couple weeks ago, I did my first conference at Game for Change.
Oh, you about, did?
Learning how to be better cyber citizen.
Oh my God, I love
it. It was like, for me, like a shiver crying moment. Like when I finished my conference, I cried. I was just like, this is full circle. I went to university, learn about these people, and now I'm like here talking about it.
That's so, I and just got goosebumps.
Yeah. That's you awesome. Can't just go there and like say like, I want to talk about the work I did on X Games, right? It has to be something that can change
yeah.
people.
Oh, that's so, really cool. Do you have yeah, that? I want to cool. watch it. Do you have it available somewhere? Or did you just do
I
it?
I think so. Oh, yeah, well, I have it. I have it for sure, but I don't know if it's available online. To watch. I probably.
It's probably, really cool. Congratulations on that. Yeah. That's big. Good
yeah,
for you.
That was and nobody understood. Like everyone in esports was like, "Game for Change, who cares?" And I was like,
"You're like, I do."
No, that is like a life. This is a bucket list for me, you know, because mm-hmm. it's not just like I want to do a talk. It's about like what can I actually talk about that's relevant. So
because
well,
you know
a
that
really
it,
good challenge.
That it inspired you when you were so young, you know, so
exactly
that'll just inspire somebody else. It's just hopefully. Passing it on. That's really cool.
Hopefully in 10 years people are like, instead of us talking about how you should watch a TEDx about Jane, you should watch
that Miss Harvey
that Miss Harvey Games for Change conference that she did 10 years ago. Maybe one day I'll meet Stephen Colbert too.
Stephen Colbert. That would be cool. Yes.
Oh yeah. He says it French ways.
He does. Colbert. I don't know if that is, if that was really the pronunciation. I think he just did it for that show.
Okay. He created the French pronunciation. Like his family doesn't say it the French way, but he thinks it's lame to not say it the French way. So he says it the French
way. It's funny because my family lives in Colbert, Washington. So we sometimes say Colbert.
Colbert.
My husband's like, oh, are they in Colbert?
Are they in Colbert?
Mm-hmm. Oui, oui.
Oh, la, la. So that was my Jane McGonigal story.
I love it.
But you knew so much already. But
I
it's
mean,
great that we were able to talk about it together.
I love being able to talk about her with you. And there's so much that I didn't know either. Like, I mean, I really kind of knew her more just specifically from the, from Super Better specific, because that helped me recover. And in that time
that
period
is,
it was just harder to find information.
You'll never convince me that you shouldn't have done the story. I think you should. If you played Super Better and it helped you, I feel that this should have been your story.
No,
but
no,
I chose there.
We're cutting that part out. We are cutting that part out. No, I'm glad.
No,
we are. We're cutting that out. It's important that you did this story on her because she inspired you to become a game designer and to figure out how to do that. Like there are not very many women in that field, or at least there weren't for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's really cool that there is somebody who was a woman who can inspire you to do that. And like, I would love to play that project that you made about bonobos.
It was like all prototype. It never became like a real game. Obviously we were in school, but there's a game that came out a year ago from someone in Quebec. He's the original creative director on Assassin's Creed, and he started his own studio, and I think it's called Ancestral. Ancestor is a survival game developed by Panache, who's French in Quebec. In the game, players control a lineage of primates and are tasked to ensure its survival in prehistoric Africa and facilitate its evolution.
Whoa. Yeah.
Directed by Patrice Desilets, which is the Assassin's Creed guy. And I couldn't believe it when I saw that.
I was like, wait a minute.
Dude, that's my game. The players does discovery. Primates become more intelligent and capable. You discover new skills by looking at the other players. Like, I'm like, this is the game I wrote 10 years ago. That's crazy. I've always said the game that you think it's somewhere already in the world thought about it. Like, you're never original with your game. Mm-hmm. It's about, like, pushing it and developing it and releasing it. So he released it first. That's all that matters. He won. Yeah. Patrice Desilets won. Miss Harvey zero.
Maybe you just, this is your project with Max, is that you guys can make like a mobile version of that in some way. Your own. Yeah. And then it'll be one and one.
10 years ago when I thought about it, I think that the graphics were not good enough to make game. It would have been probably like, Ew.
Yeah. Ew. Like David.
Ew. Like David. Ew. Ew.
And I walked into our guest bathroom. It has this like
David. Ew.
This plastic toilet paper holder. And I walked in and I went, oh my God. And my husband was like, you're just David now. I was like so personally offended. I didn't even know it was there. Lived in this house for 3 years. I'm like, oh, what is that? Oh. Hideous. Took it off immediately. Anyway.
Oh my God.
Stephanie, I love that story. That was such a good story.
You love the story? Oh, yes. I'm happy. So I can't wait to see yours. You know, the week since your stories are so much better.
I mean,
they're better because I'm less stressed. Not better because, you know, there's I'm so stressed when it's my third.
Yeah. It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and I was reading my notes like up, down this whole time, so my story didn't make, was it coherent?
It's conversational. Yeah, it was fun. That's what's kind of interesting about it.
I hope that you guys liked it at home. Let us know if you knew about her, if you discovered her on the show, and if you did discover her on the show, go watch her TED Talk.
Yeah, go do it, guys. You won't be sorry. Also, her book, Reality is Broken, is excellent. Totally suggest it to everybody. And if you have a story that you want to share here on the Game Diaries about how video games have affected your life, you can email us or go to our website, thegamediaries.com.
Thank you so much, Michelle. And thank you, Danny, our producer, behind the scene, just listening to us, probably facepalming all the time.
And make sure, too, if you're enjoying the podcast, to subscribe and leave us a comment and some stars, because it actually does help us. So the more you can do that, the better.
Yay.
Bye.
See you next week.